I'm Richie Unterberger, and I'm the author of a two-volume history of 1960s folk rock. The first is Turn, 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 and the sequel is 8 Miles High. When Paul Simon first became well-known as part of Simon and Garfunkel, I think what set Paul Simon apart from a lot of the other early folk rock stars who were combining folk music with rock music in 1965 and 1966 is that he was very much like a poet in how he was writing his lyrics, but he had much more of a pop music melodic sensibility than, say, Bob Dylan, who, of course, was also enormously popular at that time. Now, Dylan sold a lot of records, but Simon and Garfunkel, who were on the same label, Columbia Records, sold a lot more than Bob Dylan. We might recognize Bob Dylan as the more influential artist, but certainly Paul Simon was, as part of Simon and Garfunkel, selling enormous amounts of records without, however, really compromising himself and the songs that he was writing for both him and Art Garfunkel as a duo. And I think a lot of that pop sensibility had to do with his early background in rock and roll music. Unlike Bob Dylan, say, or Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, he had actually recorded rock and roll records in the late 1950s as a teenager, even had a small hit with one of them. And Simon and Garfunkel, then known as Tom and Jerry, had kind of an Everly Brothers type sound. So when it came time to combine folk music with rock music, I think Paul Simon had somewhat of an advantage over some of the other early folk rock musicians because he was not just making his lyrics more sophisticated than any rock music had been before folk rock started, but also he knew a lot about both writing pop melodies and making the songs work as pop rock records in the studio. That's a big reason why you still hear all those early Simon and Garfunkel hits on the radio today. In every setting, I mean, at hip parties and at the dentist office, you're not going to hear Just Like a Woman or Can You Please Curl Out Your Window at the Dentist Office, but you will hear Bridge Over Troubled Water and some of the other early Simon and Garfunkel songs in the most mainstream of settings. And I don't mean that as a put down. I just mean that as an indication of how accessible his material is and was. I agree with some listeners who see some of Simon and Garfunkel's early material as having kind of a dark tone and, in a sense, kind of like documenting contemporary social alienation. Certainly you hear that in The Sounds of Silence and I Am a Rock. And it's interesting that songs like those were such big hits because when you look at the lyrics in kind of a naked state, they're kind of depressing, or at least they're reflecting lives which are kind of depressing. But I think it struck a very responsive chord because, first of all, they were dressed up in very pretty melodies, arrangements, and vocal harmonies. I don't want to diminish the importance of Art Garfunkel's contribution here. But at the same time, it was also, I think, embraced because these were lyrical concepts which had rarely been heard in popular music, at least American popular music, before this era, certainly rarely been heard in rock music. You might have had songs about how sad someone was that their baby was leaving them. There were tons of songs like that. But to have songs expressing, even in a very broad sense, the larger kind of alienating aspects of society and connecting with other people, that was a very new thing. And a lot of Simon and Garfunkel's early listeners at that time were teenagers or people at their very early 20s who were just starting to embrace those questions because that's a time when you're forming your identity, and often that's in opposition to what the prevailing status quo is. In that sense, Simon and Garfunkel both reflected that search and confusion, and they were very reassuring because you heard these songs that were very successful all the time that were mirroring that. One of the Simon and Garfunkel songs that always struck me as something really different and looking at the context of their career, kind of unexpected, was Scarborough Fair. Because even though that's rooted in a very traditional folk song, and it almost sounds like a medieval song when it starts out, it doesn't sound like a non-such record of people trying to recreate medieval songs or some of those folk revival records from the 60s where they're trying to envision themselves playing it as if they were living in the 17th or 18th century. It sounds very modern, and in part that's because of the genius of the vocal harmony arrangements that Paul and Art worked out, but also the way that they integrate two different melodies, almost two different songs into one. I think it's almost genius because when a lot of people try to do that, often it just sounds terrible. It sounds like two different radio stations playing at once. When you heard this song, it almost, you could have heard it for a bunch of times without really even realizing there's like almost two different songs going on there because they mesh so well with each other and provided such effective counterpoint to each other that the combination never seemed intrusive. And again, I was trying to pick a song that maybe wasn't one of their biggest hits, so that, you know, that's pretty well known because Bridge Over Troubled Water, say, later on is an example where they are going in a very different direction from their early recordings. They're using very grand gospel music and orchestration and pretty effectively. Scarborough Fair is perhaps a lesser exposed example of an innovation that they made that, again, like some of the Beatles' innovations, they almost kind of pass by because they're so pleasant, they're so easy to digest, and they're so fun. But when you realize how much construction was involved in getting those counterpoints to work effectively with each other, it's amazing. I just mentioned this in passing in one of my previous comments. Although Art Garfunkel essentially didn't write any material for Simon and Garfunkel, I think when you're looking at Paul Simon's career in the early days, one shouldn't overlook Art Garfunkel's contribution because both on the lead vocals that he took, but certainly in their harmonies, they took Paul Simon's songs to a place where he could not have taken them by himself. I think that's true of a lot of the songs of the Beatles, to go back to that example. John and Paul took each other's songs often to places they couldn't have gotten to on their own. Now, Paul Simon proved very able in his solo career at getting to those similar places on his own. But at that time, in the mid to late 60s, Art Garfunkel was invaluable in doing that. And that's part of the reason that Paul Simon fans still consider the stuff before his solo career as important as what he did as a solo artist, because it has a very different quality to the vocal arrangements, which distinguish it from anything else that he's done as a solo artist, which are very attractive. And I have another comment which might be useful for you in the context of Graceland, even though that's not an album I'm an expert on. I think that's something that's been very characteristic of Paul Simon's career, is that he has been able to change styles and adopt numerous other popular music styles without changing the core of his sound. And this predates Graceland. This is going back to the very start of his career when, like I said earlier, he and Art Garfunkel were playing rock and roll in kind of an Everly Brothers style. He reinvented himself as a solo acoustic folk singer in England after recording the first album with Art Garfunkel, which was a folk album already, the first, you know, their debut album. Then he reinvented himself, becoming a folk rock artist on record. Simon and Garfunkel's music got a lot more sophisticated with his orchestration by the time of Bridge Over Troubled Waters. In the early 70s, then, he incorporated reggae, one of the first white rock musicians to do so. Also gospel with Loves Me Like a Rock. So when you look at his career as a whole, although at the time maybe using the South African musicians for Graceland so prominently was a surprise, in the context of his career, he's always been restless and always been eager to adopt different styles and also styles that are not of his culture are, you know, associated with culture of the United States. He's been really good at doing that. It seemed almost like risky and safe at the same time. I mean, when I heard songs like Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard or Cecilia, I never thought, you know, this is far out, or, you know, I'm not used to this. It's not what I'm used to hearing from Simon and Garfunkel. They were such good songs and such catchy songs that you never felt like he was really taking that much of a risk. I mean, he was, in the sense that I'm sure a lot of the people at his record company would much rather that he kept writing stuff like Sounds of Silence and Mrs. Robinson until people were absolutely tired of that. But he was able to move to different styles, but always keep sounding like himself, never lose track of the song, always deliver it in very commercial packages without selling out.